This morning, can I invite you to take time to consider Jesus as he enters Jerusalem? Jesus has traveled the Judean countryside for 3 years, proclaiming the kingdom of God. He's walked on water, he's healed the sick, he's made the blind see, he's made the lame walk. He's fed the 5,000, he's calmed the storm, he's even raised the dead. But now he nears his pivotal destination. Now he reaches the centerpiece, the goal of his mission. Now he comes to fulfill God's promises as the promised king. And so, as we see him today in Luke's gospel, as he nears the holy city of Jerusalem, as he nears the agonizing road to the cross, we must look at him and ask for ourselves. Is he the king? Is he the promised Messiah? Is he the promised Christ? Is he the promised king? And even deeper than that, we must ask of ourselves, is he my king? Is he my king? Is he the one to rule over my life? Is he the one who I follow? So, as Jesus enters Jerusalem, let us see the king that he is. He is the king who is in total control. Verses 28 to 35. After Jesus had said this, he went on ahead, going up to Jerusalem. As he approached Bethphage and Bethany at the hill called the Mount of Olives, he sent two of his disciples, saying to them, "Go to the village ahead of you. And as you enter it, you will find a colt tied there, which no one has ever ridden. Untie it and bring it here. If anyone asks you, 'Why are you untying it?' say, 'The Lord needs it.' Those who were sent ahead went and found it just as he had told them. As they were untying the colt, its owner asked them, 'Why are you untying the colt?' They replied, 'The Lord needs it.' They brought it to Jesus, threw their cloaks on the colt, and put Jesus on it." Jesus is the king who is in total control. He knows where he's heading. He knows what lies ahead and is in control. And here we see him fulfilling the promises of the coming Messiah, the coming king who would bring rescue. Our Old Testament prophets had brought God's message to his people of this king, this promised Messiah to come, the one who would bring peace, the one who would bring victory, the one who would bring triumph to God's people, rescue them from their enemies. But many people had taken that to mean a military leader, similar to a Roman emperor, one who with great power would subdue his enemies, enter like a proud king on their chariot, followed by his army. But that was not the picture of the king that God had in mind. There was a deeper triumph to be won. Now, this king would enter Zion in a different way. In fact, 600 years before Jesus, the prophet Zechariah spoke these words from God. Zechariah 9, verse 9, "Rejoice greatly, daughter Zion. Shout, daughter Jerusalem. See, your king comes to you, righteous and victorious, lowly and riding on a donkey, on a colt, the foal of a donkey." And now we see Jesus fulfilling this picture of the promised king, a king not entering Jerusalem in splendor with an army in tow, but the promised king riding a humble donkey, entering Jerusalem with humility, but entering Jerusalem totally in control. He directs what is to happen here. He knows where the colt will be. He knows it is his time to enter Jerusalem and bring peace and victory to those who proclaim him as king. Indeed, even in the week to come, when Jesus looks like he's lost control, when it seems like he's been defeated and humiliated, he remains in total control. He remains totally in control and focused on his ultimate act as our king, to bring rescue, to bring peace, to bring victory once and for all. And as he nears closer to Jerusalem, he's also the king who is celebrated. verse 36 to 38. As he went along, people spread their cloaks on the road. When he came near the place where the road goes down the Mount of Olives, the whole crowd of disciples began joyfully to praise God in loud voices for all the miracles they had seen. Blessed is the King who comes in the name of the Lord. Peace in heaven and glory in the highest. As he nears Jerusalem, some lay down these cloaks, this ancient red carpet for the King. Some here seem to know who he is, even though many will forget in the days to come. His disciples see him as king and they celebrate him. He is the promised Messiah from God. They've already seen it in the miracles he's done, but now as he enters God's city, they celebrate his arrival with words that are reserved only for the true king. They echo the words of Psalm 118, a psalm of royal entry, declaring, "Blessed is the King who comes in the name of the Lord." They also declare of Jesus' arrival, "Peace in heaven and glory in the highest." Where else have we heard these words declared? Peace in heaven and glory in the highest. They are words proclaimed 33 years before this, outside of Bethlehem to a group of humble shepherds. The day when the King was born and angels appeared, singing of this glory appearing from heaven. The birth of the one who would bring true peace. This King entering on a donkey is not just another King in a long line of kings who have claimed victory, only to be defeated by the next powerful King. No, this King comes with the power and authority of God. This King will bring true everlasting peace. This King is Emmanuel, God with us. And so he is the King to be celebrated. But there are some who don't agree. Jesus doesn't fit their picture of the promised King. And so Jesus is also the King who is rejected. Verses 39 to 40. Some of the Pharisees in the crowd said to Jesus, "Teacher, rebuke your disciples." "I tell you," he replied, "if they keep quiet, the stones will cry out." The religious elite, the spiritual authorities, they had already made up their mind about this so-called King. He is not their Messiah. They do not celebrate him. They're disgusted by the idea that this lowly Galilean peasant could possibly be the victorious Messiah from God. They openly reject Jesus and demand he stop this wild celebration. His disciples have gone too far. They demand Jesus stop them. Because this celebration, it isn't just declaring Jesus as a special teacher. No, this is celebrating him as the King, as the long-promised Messiah. Jesus needs to stop them. They've gone too far. But Jesus makes it clear here that the celebration is accurate. Here he affirms the declarations they make, the claims they make of him being king. Here he makes it clear to those who have rejected him that he is indeed the king. He is the king, and if his disciples weren't shouting it out, well, the rocks underneath their feet would do the job. Creation itself would pick up the chorus of joyful praise because the King has arrived. God's King, God's salvation plan has finally arrived. But they reject the King. And in the weeks that follow, the rejection builds. They will not bow to this promised King. They will not raise him up and seat him on his rightful throne. Instead, they will raise him up on a cross. They will condemn him as a blasphemer and a criminal. They will reject the promised King, the Son of God, and put him to death. And Jesus knows it. Jesus knows the rejection that lies ahead. He's in control of it. He knows the road he is to travel as the suffering servant King. He knows that even his own closest friends will not recognize him. His own closest friends will desert him. His own people will refuse to see the King who now enters in righteousness and victory. And so Jesus is also the king who weeps. Verse 41 to 44. As he approached Jerusalem and saw the city, he wept over it and said, "If you, even you, had only known on this day what would bring you peace. But now it is hidden from your eyes. The days will come upon you when your enemies will build an embankment against you and encircle you and hem you in on every side. They will dash you to the ground, you and the children within your walls. They will not leave one stone on another because you did not recognize the time of God's coming to you." So here Jesus continues past the Mount of Olives and finally he sees the city. He catches his first final glance of Jerusalem. So he looks down over the Kidron Valley and over to the sprawling splendor of Jerusalem with the magnificent temple, the symbol of God's presence among his people. He's finally returned to God's city. The king has arrived. But as he finally gazes upon the city, he weeps. Why does he weep? Is he weeping for himself, knowing the agony and brutality that lie ahead in the coming week? No. Here he doesn't weep for himself. The king weeps for Jerusalem. The king weeps for God's chosen people. Why? Because he knows the judgment that is in store for them because they fail to recognize him as their king. The great city of Jerusalem, where God's chosen kings had once ruled, where God's mighty temple stands, they were going to miss the arrival of the Prince of Peace riding on a donkey. They were going to reject, arrest, mock, beat, and execute the king who brought peace. Oh, if they had only known what Jesus was bringing. Oh, if they had only seen that he was their king bringing true peace. Not just peace from the Romans or from some other occupying force. No, this king was bringing them peace with God. An eternal, all-satisfying peace. But they were blinded to him. They could not see the king. They would miss the day of God's arrival among them. And Jesus knew that that meant judgment. Jesus knew that meant destruction. To ignore the king meant to ignore the salvation, the rescue, the victory that only he was bringing. And for the city of Jerusalem, it would only be in a generation's time when that judgment arrived. When in AD 70, the Romans, just as Jesus says here, would totally destroy Jerusalem. Where they would lay siege to the city and totally destroy the magnificent temple. Where they would horribly massacre and enslave men, women, and children. And so, Jesus weeps. Here we see the heart of our king. The king weeps over Jerusalem because they are missing the only chance for peace. The king weeps over those who will soon shout, "Crucify him, crucify him." Because he offers them peace. He offers them salvation, but they choose judgment and destruction. You see, this is the king who loves, who is filled with compassion. This is the king who now is filled with sorrow because people fail to see that he is the king who offers life itself. He is the king who wants to give them peace, but they turn away. He's the king that offers victory, but they turn away. It's because peace will not come through military force. Victory will not come through military force. No, peace comes through the king riding on a donkey. Peace will come through this rejected king. The terms of peace is the willing surrender and sacrifice of the king himself. The king who will be nailed to a tree to bring peace. The king who will be nailed to a tree to bring victory over sin and death. Here is the king. Is he your king? And do you celebrate him? Do you worship him? Friends, have you accepted the terms of peace that he alone offers? His terms of peace are clear throughout his word. Romans 5:8. But God demonstrates his love for us in this. While we were still sinners, Christ died for us. This is the terms of peace. While I was a sinner, while I was an enemy of Jesus, while I was an enemy of the King died for me. This is the terms of peace. While you were a sinner, while you were an enemy of the King died for you. And so the terms of peace are clear. We must follow this King. We must love this King. We must trust this King. But oh, what a King. He's the King who has already accepted on himself the terms of peace. He's the King who died to give you and me peace with God. Oh, what a King. The King who loves you. The King who weeps when people fail to see the riches and love found only in his grace. Is he your King? And if he is your King, does it show? This King weeps over those who are lost. He weeps over those who are rejecting him. Do you? Do you weep for the lost? Do you tell others of your wondrous Prince of Peace? Or do you stay quiet and leave it for the rocks to do? Do you celebrate and worship the King in all areas of your life? Or do you stay quiet and leave it for the rocks? Do you herald in the King of this world? Do you let others know of this humble King riding on a donkey who in love offers peace beyond our wildest imagination? Or do you stay quiet and leave it to the rocks? Blessed is the King who comes in the name of the Lord. Is he your King? The King of your life? The King you can't stay quiet about? Let us today and every day celebrate him as our King. Crown him the Lamb upon the throne, the Lord of love, the Lord of life. As we're going to sing now, all hail, Redeemer, hail. For thou hast died for me. Thy praise shall never, never fail throughout eternity.